Come one, come all, to War with a Mate, with me, James.
Me, Andy.
We are here. We are not live. That's not a podcast work. It's pre-recorded, and we are going to edit it. We're going to upload it, and you'll be listening to it at a later date. This is not happening right now. This is happening in the past.
It's good to clear that up.
Yeah, I just don't want any confusion. I don't want people to start, like, heckling at us and thinking we can hear it and you know, trying to change the course of things.
No, that's what the emails are for.
Yeah, you're allowed to heckle at plays, but you can't heckle here. In fact, I would encourage you, next time you're at a play or the theatre, if you heckle, they can hear you. So there will be material change. They will respond to you if you heckle loud enough and long enough.
Try and get the actors to laugh during an important scene.
It's like the guards outside Buckingham Palace. If you make them laugh, it's sort of an achievement. It's a personal accomplishment.
You get invited in for tea with the Queen.
You get invited somewhere. You do go into an interior.
Oh, this guy made those humorless people laugh. He must be a hoot.
Yeah, exactly. You'll get, it's sort of like a, what's the comedy awards? The Razzies.
I don't, they're the bad Oscars. I don't think comedy has like an Oscars thing.
There must be. There's
the
some sort
Mark
of
Twain Prize.
There's got to be some sort of award, like the Pulitzer of comedy.
That's giving comedy, I mean, I'm a fan of comedy, but that's giving it far too much credit.
Oh, the Pulitzer. Now that's good, that's gold.
That's the Razzies of comedy.
I am the Razzies of comedy. And I'm also here because we've played more of the campaign for North Africa. We do this every week.
Yeah, and a bit of a short one today.
It's one of our shorter ones. It's a truck day as well. Truck days are flying by at the moment, though.
Yeah, they're always quick when we do them.
They are moving as fast as our trucks do across road tiles, which is very quick, and it doesn't really cost much. But I guess to recap what we've done today, we picked up with the last little morsels of movement, which was my 62nd Mamasia division trying to take out those truck bandits.
Yeah, chasing them.
And a tale as old as time, they were chasing the Fusiliers. They tried to barrage them. They missed with the single barrage point that they put into this. And once again, your guys fucked off into the distance.
Scooted away.
But what they've scooted away into is to be within 2 hexes of my guns. And also, they are not too far from another division that have been boxing in your other truck bandits.
Maybe I'll take the guns and use them.
I don't think you'll be able to do that because they are going to shoot at you when you get close.
We'll see.
No, there's not ambiguity.
We'll figure that out.
No, right, okay.
We'll figure that.
There's definitive rules to determine what happens in that situation. There's a combat that ensues, and I'm going to throw out a prediction here. You retreat before combat. You will. That's what you always do. And if you don't, you're just going to die.
Maybe I'll do something else.
I don't really know what else you could do.
Think at that.
What else would you do?
Maybe react.
That's what retreat before assault is.
Yeah, it's a separate thing.
It's a reaction to my thing. I'm going to lump it in one move.
Well, everything's a reaction. That's just causality.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't mean everything's the same.
Well, this game's very causality heavy.
It breaks it a bit.
I don't think so.
Simultaneous movement.
There's very, very little simultaneous movement in this game, if any.
It's meant to be, though. That's what I mean.
It's meant to
be.
But
it happens sequentially.
Yeah, but, you know, that's how time works.
That was my point.
No, that was my point.
Okay.
I said that at the same time as you. Causally.
No, I don't like this.
I
reject this premise of yours.
You can't reject time. You can try all you want.
I could.
Speaking of rejecting time, I am rejecting this time of Dry January. I reject it.
Oh, that's bad.
I you know what? We're a week in. You and I have both decided to partake in Dry January.
Yep.
And I'm having this nice alcohol-free Corona here with you. And I wonder what could have been. Could I have been on a slight buzz? I could have.
This has worked out fine for me because I'm currently on antibiotics and can drink anyway.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that. That works perfectly.
I'm getting my medicine in January.
Hang on. Is this why you wanted to do Dry January with me? Because you're taking medicine.
Yeah.
Well, the slight buzz I get is from playing the campaign for North Africa. That's all of the injection of depressant I need to my body.
Don't do drugs, kids. Play the campaign for North Africa.
Yeah, it's much less damaging to the central nervous system.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, the long-term effects of the campaign for North Africa on the central nervous system haven't been studied to a very in-depth degree.
We'll get the another award ceremony. We'll get an Ig Nobel Prize for studying the effects of the game on the nervous system.
I don't know that we're qualified to study the effects of anything on anything.
That's why it'll be an Ig Nobel Prize.
Is this an actual award?
Yeah, it's like, it's not for bad science, I don't think. It's for, like, pointless science, almost. Like, there was a guy who cracked his right hand, like, every day, but never cracked his left to see if, like, you know, when you crack your...
Oh, to see if it causes, like, arthritis or something.
Yeah, and it didn't. I think he got one for that, because it's... Yeah.
He's went through a real ordeal to get to that knowledge point.
Yes.
We should...
Which we didn't really need.
We should get an award.
Well, we've got time.
Well, we actually do have an award.
Let's win the BAFTA.
We have an award right here, Andy.
From your work.
Yeah. Have we mentioned this before, that we've won an award?
I don't know.
This is an award-winning podcast, everyone. You see, I won... an award. When I started my current job, there was a sort of pseudo award ceremony when we finished all of our training, big intake group, and we all finished it, and there was an award ceremony where people voted on categories, sort of the usual, like biggest caffeine fiend, office joker, that sort of thing. And one of them was most interesting hobby. And I've been known from time to time to rabbit on about playing the campaign for North Africa. When people ask what I'm doing on the evening, I'll tell them I am playing a long board game. They'll ask, what's that? And I'll go on and they sort of go, oh, that sounds interesting. So is it like Risk? And it's like, sort of, yeah.
Just say yes.
And I try and get into the nitty-gritty, and then I realize
they don't want to hear it.
That's what the podcast is for. This is where we talk about that. People in the real world don't need to know about it. But nonetheless, I was nominated and won the award for most interesting hobby. So
it's not really an award for the podcast.
It is. I got a little plastic trophy. It's here on the mantelpiece next to the board. So that is attributed to me playing the board game. That is for the podcast. The podcast is award-winning, and no one can say shit about it.
Fine, I guess.
And
fight you that hard on this.
And if anyone does say shit about it, I will delete the email and Andy won't see it. So don't even try. And if you send it to the Instagram, I man that. So Andy will never see it.
Send in a web form.
Do not send a web form. I don't have access to those. I don't have a way to stop that getting to Andy. Do not feed Andy information. He will abuse it. As you can tell, we're going off on a tangent because it's truck day. We don't have a whole lot to talk about.
Yeah, we didn't do much.
We had that combat, and then we had a little jig round of the trucks. I remembered that you've taken one of my convoys again. So I'm down to realistically two convoys that can do things.
Wait, what? Really?
Yes. I've got convoy 3 and convoy 15.
So to Brook and Body, you're just going to run out of stuff?
No, because they have...
Oh, because of the access shipping.
Yeah, the shipping brings all their stuff in. It's more a case of how am I going to get the stuff from there to everyone else. What I've done is I've created, you know, Supply Dump 1. You've been there.
Been there, I've bombed it with ships, I've bombed it with airplanes.
You're intimately familiar with Supply Dump 1.
I think I've done everything I allowed to do with it. The Long Range Desert Group raided it.
Everyone's been there. You've manipulated it in every single way you can.
Yeah.
And because of that, I needed to restock it. You dropped your men in recently, which thirded the ammo supplies, because every time you dip into my supply dumps, it reduces the ammo that I can use to a third. And then when I go back in, it thirds it again, essentially. So that now means it's a very low threshold. Actually, no, I wouldn't need a third at a second time. I don't think I needed a third at a second time.
Because it was technically mine. I don't know how we're going to handle it.
Oh, it was thirded for you, and now it's thirded for me again.
Yeah, it's a third, and then yeah. Every time it swaps hands, it thirds, basically.
Fair enough.
Even though I didn't do anything with it.
Okay, yeah. No, that checks out. So because of that, I needed to resupply that. So I've given myself a little bit more ammo, some more stores, and that is... basically all I can do with my current supply chain. I've got trucks on the way. The black shirts that are coming from Tripoli have a lot of attached trucks, which I'm now going to have to use for a plan. Because what I did have a revelation of, unfortunately, during this session, was that my airdrop plan that I mentioned last time is not viable. Because the planes I have can't fly transport missions for troops. They can only travel with supplies, or they can power drop men. And I don't have men I can power drop that I can find anyway.
No, that seems to be a fairly late game.
So that means at present, it's going to have to be boots on the ground.
Some land stuff.
So because of that, when I get my black shirts to the front line, I'm going to do a bit of a rejig with my trucks. And some people are getting motorized.
Do you have... Because they're fully motorized, right?
They're fully motorized.
And motorizing them, motorizing someone else.
I have a lot of trucks. I can motorize more people and still have trucks for my new convoys.
Oh, really? How many trucks have come in?
I've got all the ones that they're in, and then I've got another just shy of 100.
Attached to them, but...
Attached as first line.
Yeah.
So if I broke those off and say half of them become convoys and then half of them become...
So a lot of trucks.
Yes. So that means I can turn motorize some...
quite a bit.
I can get a division or so motorized. Maybe I'll break off some of the trucks that are motorizing the black shirts. One of the black shirt divisions I've got coming are worse than the other.
Right.
So I'm going to break off the one that's worse. I'm going to keep the one that's good. And with that, I've then got some quick guys. Okay. So the fast boys are going to become vitally important. Because now I can't airdrop. Can't transport mission, which is what I was hoping for. Another thing, which I mentioned to you today, is I'm going to finally get Fort Maddalena back up and running.
Yeah, so you're going to get your SGSUs there.
Yes, that's what I need to do, because the airfield is intact. It's reduced capacity by one.
Yours come in from Tripoli, right?
They do. But what I'm going to do is backfill. So I'm going to move some of the SGSUs from airfields I currently have, where the planes aren't going to be as useful as the myriad of fighters that I've got.
Yes.
I'm going to move them away from some of the bombers, because my supply line doesn't really... Oh, that's my third convoy, by the way, the one that's supplying the...
The planes,
the planes up in Map B, because they can go to Tobruk and then the airfields.
Right.
So I'm going to move some of the SGSUs from there, from the very costly ammo-wise bombers.
To the fighters.
To the fighters. And then have some fighters that can do some damage. I'd like to have that back at Fort Maddalena. I've been missing Fort Maddalena. It was a godsend early game for my Air Force, and I want that back.
Fair enough.
So that's my current plan.
So you can have some turns with no... No air flight.
No, I've still got some. I'm going to cycle them around. So I'm going to move SGSUs out of bombers I'm not going to use. Whether it's a case of they're not refitted or they don't have ammo or they're just not my prime bombers. And continue with my other bombers.
Right, okay.
Because I've got a lot that have been sat there for a while because of the weather.
Right.
I've had time to refit them without having any real activity. Thankfully, what we did find out at the end of this, is we've moved into op stage 3 of turn 3. This is the halfway point. When we finish this, we're into half 2.
Start of turn 4 is
H2.
Halfway.
So when that happens, it will be you, once again, this next op stage 3, taking initiative, as you've declared. You'll be going first. And you've also rolled the weather.
Hot.
It is hot weather, which is bad for water consumption. Not something I'm pleased about. I would prefer to not have that to deal with, because not only is that going to tank some of my water supplies now, but at the start of the next turn, I've got the pasta point to worry about.
Yes, and stores if you haven't filled them up yet.
Stores are looking all right. I just need to get people to where the stores are.
Right.
A lot of my truck phase next turn, next op stage, this coming op stage 3 of turn 3, is going to be store heavy. I'm going to be distributing stores to the men that need it. Quite a few of them already have the stores that they need because they have been sitting pretty in settlements in major cities and they haven't had to use them. So it's
You do use stores in major cities.
Yeah, but they've had massive stockpiles to take them from.
Oh, I see what you mean.
So they've not had a sort of personal cash
to take
them. They've
been like burning the city, not their first line trucks.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they've been taken from Bardia, from Tobruk, and now they are going to have to tap into their personal supply. So I've got a turn to backfill that.
Okay.
But I'm hoping to do that the end of the op stage instead. There are some people Fort Madalena-centric, where they just don't have stores on them. So I need to get stores to them.
Oh, that bottom cluster of three divisions don't have stores.
They don't have stores. They've got that little supply dump.
Yeah, which doesn't have any stores.
It does now, because last upstage I filled it up with Convoy 15.
Oh, right, okay.
So I've given them some stores.
Okay.
It's not going to be enough for all of them.
For three divisions.
Yeah, they're not going to have enough for all of them.
Be enough to get like one fine, I guess.
I can have one fine, or I can have all three of them at half with the stuff they had left over. I just need to decide which is best. And I think realistically, it's going to be a defensive play for them for now. Unless you march up to them, they don't have anything to worry about. So all of them being on half rations would be fine.
Yeah, they just can't attack, but if you're using them for defense...
Yeah, they can't enter a zone of control, but they can involve themselves in combat if you were to be the aggressor.
Yeah.
Which is all I need for now. So they can half ration it. I just need to decide if I want any of them to go whole hog and move into map D and go on the offensive. That's what I've been weighing up. So that's been today's session. You moved your convoy, which is the usual line left to right.
Yeah, my convoys are easy. I've got them set up. I've got two big convoys that are sort of doing... Well, they're fairly even, but two of the bigger ones are doing Alexandria, Mercer, Matru, and back.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got a third one that's sort of darting around Mercer, Matru, and supplying everyone there.
And I don't like that. I don't like that you've got such a nice, nourished supply line, despite my attempts to ruin that with my bombing runs. And of course, because it's hot weather, I can bomb, and I will be bombing.
Of course.
I'm going to do what I can to fuck up the supply line, because it's just... That wall that you've got pushing against mine is... It's not ideal for me.
No, it is not.
And you don't have a supply dump nearby.
Not at the minute, no.
So you need regular truck transport in order for that wall to stay up to date.
Kind of. It's close. It's close enough to Miss Matru that if I wasn't using them aggressively, they could drop back and get back to where they are.
But Mercer Matru's not a major city, though, is it?
It's
just a settlement.
Yeah.
Have you been filling that up with supplies?
Yeah, every turn.
Oh, wow. Fair enough.
Because they go from Mercer Matru to Alexandria, which is unlimited. Alexandria and Mercer Matru every turn. I'm doing two convoys, basically, in a circle.
So what I'm hearing is Mercer Matru's a good place for me to stop off.
It's stocked up, like, it's full pretty much all the time.
Are you making sure to check that it's full in village capacity?
Yes, I've just got the capacity on the sheet.
Okay, cool. Because I made that mistake where I was looking at the wrong thing for a settlement.
Yeah.
And I was filling it up like it's a major city. Thankfully, I didn't use it for anything. Because I've neglected that area massively.
I think they're like 1,000 for each or something, pretty over 1,000 for each on... Even the village one, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I've been... If it wasn't supplied, it could last a turn or two by itself.
That's pretty impressive.
Maybe stores, but other than that, it would be fine.
Yeah, I think Mercer Matru... At the minute, a lot of my plans revolve around skipping Mercer Matru and going straight for Alexandria.
Yeah.
Which is a bold play, but I've got a few ways to do that, and it mostly involves trucks. Ah, you say that.
I mean, it is. You might have a superior force that can take it, but that doesn't mean it's not well defended.
Well, that means relative, it's not well defended. Everything's relative, Andy. Is it well defended against 10 divisions? Because I got 10 divisions.
It would hold out for a bit.
No, bullshit. You are not holding off against 10 divisions. I guess, one, I can't get 10 divisions in the hexes around it.
No.
So that's sort of, I'm being a bit facetious with that. But I could put them there if I wanted to. If I wanted to lose the game, I could do that.
Do you?
I don't want to, but I fear I might. I don't think any of us are going to win this. I think this is going to be a stalemate.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a point thing.
How disappointing will that be?
Which is not great.
At the minute, we're poised for another, I think, between 20 and 25 weeks of play. Another half year to
probably
get this wrapped
something
up.
Something like that.
Unless we pick it up massively. Unless we knuckle down. Put some welly into it.
We probably won't.
Ah, that's the spirit.
We've got some longer sessions planned, potentially, where we might get like an upstage done in a day.
We do. We've got big plans. We've got to have big plans. This is a big project. We need to embellish it as much as we can. We need to fuel this flame. We need to stoke the fires of passion. Do you feel impassioned, Andy? Do you feel enraged?
No, I'm pretty low energy.
It's these medicines you're taking.
Yeah, it was one of those days where I was like, I did wish this was a different day.
I did come in and I was like, Andy's sleepy. This is at least it's a truck day. It's fairly low effort.
Yeah,
but that's part of the fun that we don't get to not do this. We haven't had a single week since we started this where we haven't done this.
No.
That's wild that we've pulled this off every time.
We've been a couple buffer episodes.
Still, it's been
most weeks.
Few and far between. I think either way, it's still been bookended by technically the following week.
Yeah, because we've made it up.
It's been like the Monday of 1 week and then the Friday the week after. So we always get it in there. And that's sad.
It's good. Consistency.
Yeah,
it's the accountability tool working.
It really is. Because we get people emailing in, we get people asking about it, and maybe we should have a little look at that now.
Yeah, let's see what we're hearing, because
we've covered off the game stuff.
Not much to talk about on Truck Day.
Yeah, that's what we did. We did Truck Day, and if anyone has anything that they'd like to hear about Truck Day, that was it. There's nothing further. We've divulged it all. However, you have divulged some things, haven't you, folks? We have some choice emails, and the first of which is from, let's have a little look here, it's from Skep. Skep has emailed us, Andy.
What's Skep got to say?
Skep has said, good morning, mates. Well, it's not morning here, so.
As you pointed out at the start, it's not live, so.
Yeah, but that still feels, I don't know, maybe we have to skip this one. That doesn't feel very, very tentative to our needs.
Read the email.
All right, twist my arm. Good morning, mates. I like that as well. I like the collective term of mates.
Yeah, it's nice.
It feels friendly and warm. I'm wrapping up the most recent episode of the podcast, 54, in which Andy finishes his report on Operation Compass. You asked for more examples of major military upsets, and one immediately came to mind, the Battle of Red Cliffs, which took place in the winter of 208 to 209 AD during the Three Kingdoms period of China. This is a fairly well-known example, as it is a pivotal moment in the somewhat fictionalized Chinese literary classic Romance of the Three Kingdoms. It has also been portrayed in film and video games, so if I'm not the only person to suggest this one, you're welcome to skip this email so as not to repeat content. This isn't the one that was mentioned, though, was it? We did have another email.
There was one for a warehouse in China during World War II. This is, yeah, not.
This is somewhat earlier, 208 AD,
yeah,
slightly prior. At the time, the Han Dynasty was in decline, and a warlord named, I'm going to have a look at the pronunciation after. Yes, pronunciation looks like cow cow, but the C makes a TS sound. So Cao Cao was consolidating power in northern China. He wasn't an incompetent commander, though through his tactical cunning, goodness me, he was fresh off of his own underdog victory, which had eliminated his largest rival in the north. Cao Cao then set his sights south. The sounds in this, the Cao Cao and sights south, this feels like a tongue twister that I've been sent. Advancing into central China and chasing away a token defense led by Liu Bei. Yes, there we go. Some of this may have been personal for Cao Cao, as Liu Bei was a conspirator in an assassination attempt against him years prior. Bit of rivalry, then.
I'd take that personally.
I would. If someone tried to assassinate me, I would see them as a personal foe. Vastly outnumbered, and now with little in the way of territory, Liu Bei appealed to Sun Quan. I really appreciate that you've put the pronunciations in here, by the way, Skep. That is a godsend, because this would read just poorly otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, I'm bad at pronouncing European
sounding
things
names
that share a root language of Latin, so.
Yeah, this is a godsend, thank you. Though some had urged Sun Quan to simply submit to Cao Cao, he agreed to ally with Liu Bei to defend the Southlands against the impending invasion. This would have been seen as something akin to madness, as Cao Cao was boasting 800,000 troops.
Ooh.
Most agreed this was likely a little fib, and best estimates place his actual numbers at around 250,000. That's quite the fib.
That's a huge army for
it's
2,000 years ago.
But combined, the forces of Liu Bei and Sun Quan didn't exceed 50,000. So they were still outnumbered 5-1 at best. I mean, 5-1 at best is a horrible situation to go into in any conflict.
Yeah, it's not a ratio you want.
However, we have seen instances of this going, you know, the other way. Cao Cao had organized a large fleet of captured ships to transport his soldiers across the Yangtze River. However, most of his northern army was infantry and cavalry who were not experienced in naval combat, and his ships had to be chained together for stability as a means to prevent seasickness. That's grim. On the other hand, the southern forces excelled at naval warfare, and they knew how to even the odds. Under guise of defection, one of Sun Quan's generals filled some ships with gunpowder, set them aflame, and launched them at Cao Cao's fleet. The resulting blaze easily burned through Cao Cao's linked ships. The men were able to escape the inferno and avoid the river's icy waters, and then had to contend with the forces of Liu Bei and Sun Quan as they launched a combined land assault on the panicking soldiers. That is a horrible situation.
Yeah, that is really not where you want to be on a ship tied to a burning ship.
Just fireballs coming towards you across the sea.
I'd take the seasickness.
See, yeah, at least then you can break off. Being chained to your ships as they burn is the worst way to go at water. Do you want to drown or do you want to burn? We talked about this last time, I think, wasn't it? Did we talk about the fate of water? Or was that in the other recording?
I think the other one where we were talking about drowning and people say it's not bad. And it's like, well, it is.
Yes. Oh, I know. That was something else that we recorded. That wasn't actually... It was actually this.
Yeah.
We'll get to that at some point. Cao Cao quickly ordered a retreat. But even this wasn't easy. The road home had turned wet with heavy rain, and many that were attempting to flee from the Allied attack ended up trampled or drowned in the mud. Those that avoided this fate still had to contend with the disease brought about by the southern climate and lack of supplies so severe that horses were used for food. It's theorized that more soldiers were lost during this retreat than the battle itself. This loss crippled Cao Cao's offensive capability for some time, freeing Liu Bei and Sun Quan to establish rival power bases and delay the reunification of China for 70 years. That is a huge ripple effect.
That's a big monumental battle.
Especially when the odds were stacked in that direction. It makes sense for it to set something back that far when you've put all your eggs in that basket and then it's just gone.
No, you just lost 250,000 men, and that's like an 18-year cycle to replace them.
And especially in that era, I mean, what's the global population in 209 AD?
I don't know, but also, like, if you look at the top 10 wars by, like, casualties, I mean, like, 5 of them are in China.
Yeah.
As, like, just, like, civil wars.
And they're all... I saw a meme not too long ago, and it's sort of, like, talking about, like, the travesties of European wars and the casualties. And then there's a conflict in China, and it'll be like the something disagreement or the something transgression, and it's like millions of deaths associated with it.
Yeah.
It's like, this is not something that's commonly taught in schools, at least in Europe, in the UK.
Yeah.
And then you find out about it, and it's like, cool, so all of these conflicts that we've been made aware of in fairly recent history, the casualties are dwarfed in some instances by a handful of engagements in China and Asia.
Yeah.
I mean, this here, 250,000, maybe 800,000, depending on how intense the fib was.
Also, this is a battle in the Three Kingdoms, which I think is like 100... I vaguely remember from playing a Total War a little bit. It's like a 100-year span where they're all fighting over, like, who's going to unify China. And this is one battle in it.
yeah, this is one naval conflict for the most part. But then talking about the disease that spreads afterwards, disease that starts spreading and killing people in the masses, that doesn't happen in a few days.
No.
That's the sort of thing that's spreading in weeks or months. So that goes to show there that that retreat, you're looking at like long spans of time,
there's
surely.
There's some low cohesion on that march.
Yeah, if you put that in North African campaign terms, yeah, you guys are surrendering on site. But Skep finishes. Sorry for the length of this one. Not at all. Do not apologize, Skep.
Very interesting stuff.
But you can see why it makes a compelling story. And to this day, it's considered one of the largest naval battles ever by participant count. Anyway, James, I hope you're not letting your newfound existential crisis get you down. And take comfort in knowing there is always someone who is dedicating more of their life to more trivial matters. All the best, Skep. Well, Skep, I appreciate the goodwill. Thankfully, I'm past the existential dread that befell me a few weeks ago, because I've got a newfound sense of purpose in the game ever since things heated up, and I realized that, in essence, I could win the game very quickly in the full scenario. However, it does not go to say that there's not going to be trying times along the way, but I feel ready for that now. With the new year has come a new strength of character and soul, and me ready to try and swing a win over Andy through whatever means necessary.
Okay.
I mean, I poisoned you, which is why you now have antibiotics.
Yep.
And, you know, when I start spiking the antibiotics, that's going to be a perfect way to create some, not subterfuge, but I guess illness.
I'd say that's subterfuge as well, if you poison me.
I don't know. The fact I've told you I'm going to poison you, is it subterfuge at that point, or is it just poisoning a friend?
I guess it's just poisoning a friend.
That's what we should call this
move
podcast.
Beyond subterfuge.
Poison with a friend instead of war with a mate.
Yeah.
But thank you for that, Skep. That is good. We did ask for these mismatched conflicts, and that's a scary one. Because
I've been enjoying them, and this has been a good one. That's a crazy, crazy mismatch.
When I got into this, I didn't know much about the North African campaign, and another area of history I have no idea about, realistically, is not just China back then, but China at any point, really. I do not know much of China's history.
No.
So all of these conflicts that have been brought up that are China-centric, or just Asia-centric, I know very little about Asian history. So getting a little glimpse into that is another fun slice of history to be invested in. I've never really played many games around Chinese history or any Asian history. I've not gotten to any of the Total War games that I focused on. I don't really play many Total War games at all, to be honest. But I think it's an era of history that's just bathed in blood.
Yeah. It's a rich vein for,
oh god,
to
yeah,
find out about.
It's massive, like, cultural lines that I just haven't tapped into. So maybe when we wrap this up, we'll find an Asian-centric game.
Also, for most of its history, like, we would go through the Dark Ages and China was building, like, million-person cities when London was, like, 20,000 people.
Yeah, we were just constantly going racked with plagues or fires. Yeah. Very close together as well. That whole fire and plague thing, it seems like this story is testament that that just happens. You get a big fire, you have a plague, you reset the board.
They link up.
And then 70 years later, things are back to normal. Yeah. But what's next on the docket?
I've got an email from Afin. They've sent in about another topic. We like words.
Oh, words I like. Words I know a few more of than battles in China.
Hello again, Andy and James. Hearing other people saying about re-listening to old episodes reminded me of various reoccurring discussions which you had. One was about people's favourite words and one about y'all. The one, I have one which combines these two. My favourite word, by which I mean a word I'm trying to use more, is thou and its conjugates. Thee, thy, thine. It removes the ambiguity of it referring to an individual or a group, and it is just as useful as y'all, but solves the problem in the other way. The other way to deal with this is to speak as if one is always in the House of Commons, referring to other people as my honourable friend, but this seems to irritate people much quicker. I am and shall endeavour to remain your most subtle, humble, and brave of servants, Afin. Thanks for that, Afin.
Yeah, I think that I really
do
like
bringing some ye olde speak back, especially when it's like specific and suits a purpose that's like re-emerged.
And the best part about that is just slipping it into normal conversation.
Yeah.
Because that is a term that you can drop into any sort of modern conversation, and you're just swapping out a directive, a pronoun.
Yeah.
So all you need to do is throw that in there, and yeah, it'll raise some eyebrows, but if it catches on in your circle, then people will know what you're talking about. Hard one to do with strangers. I don't think I could do that at work. I think I might get into some complicated conversations.
Yeah, it's sort of the same way I've not really used y'all in my, like, day-to-day, because people will be like, why are you talking like that?
I guess I don't often address groups in conversation. I'm not often speaking to collectives.
No, that's very rare.
So I think, for me, I don't get to use y'all a whole lot. I got to use it on this, but even then I neglect it. I think the only time I tend to say y'all is during the segment, and then I remember how much I love it, and then I forget to use it. So, you know, we really appreciate y'all sending in emails. There we go. Perfect.
Y'all, and then the, thine, thou.
And the use of my honourable friend is one that I can definitely start dropping into conversation within my social circles.
I want to start insulting people like MPs do.
What, by not...
Where they have to be like, my honourable friend has obfuscated the truth due to limited cognitive... Like, they have to couch it in all this stuff, because you can't just be like, you're an idiot.
I thought it meant you were going to insult people the way that MPs do by not delegating resources to their local constituency like they promised to.
That's a different kind of insult. That's less fun and zippy.
Yeah, that one comes down to the common man. That one doesn't really happen just in the commons. But... to move away from that pseudo-political point, thank you, Ethan, and everyone else who sent in some messages. We've got some messages around the festive period. Looks like that was actually received on Christmas Day.
Ooh.
That one came through on Christmas. So thank you for spending
festive cheer.
Some of your Christmas Day, Ethan. Whether celebrated or not, it's still a good use of what I imagine is probably a day off if you're working or studying. Whatever you're doing, we appreciate that. We were in the deserts of your mind at such an occasion, and you decided to send us over a little bit of wordplay. Festive or not, we can use that one. So, we've got plenty more in the bag, more that we'll tap into in future. And if you want to contribute yourself, fire it on over to our email address, which is info@warwithamate.co.uk. Our Instagram is just warwithamate, and our website is warwithamate.co.uk. We have a web form on there, which you can send things over to. We Instagram the update, or we update the Instagram every week. That's a tongue twister. It's all of those pronunciations there, which most of which I butchered, really tied my tongue up. I'm just not good at... For someone who says they like words, I'm not good at pronunciating ones that...
Pronunciating.
Fucking hell. Fucking hell. This is bad. This is bad. You know what? I can't even say that I've had too much to drink. Bro's on the 0%ers. I'm too sober. I need a little bit of liquid luck. It's a Harry Potter reference. I don't get liquid luck. I don't understand how it works in the Harry Potter books.
Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, I guess that is a lot of Harry Potter. We'll not get to that rabbit hole, though. That's
that one at least is like, yeah, the plot armor is a potion.
Yeah, at least it sort of has a narrative form to it.
Yeah, I'm fine with that stuff if it's justified.
It's not justified.
Oh, okay.
I refute that. Anyway, let's move on into the past, Andy. How about that? And we'll do so, beckoned on in, with the history segment intro.
The men of the long-range desert patrols were quite a sight on their return to Cairo from a month's trip to
the contrast between the east and west of the Nile is very marked. In the east, the country...
At this point, I gave little thought to my future, but had always been interested in boats and the sea.
What put it
I am more or less in the position of a
captain
in command of a ship,
which
is on the point of sinking because errors are present.
We are absolutely not qualified to share views on history. There it is. It's long overdue.
Yeah.
So who are we looking at? Is it by any chance the 7th Armored Division?
It is. That story continues.
Let's hear it. What are they doing now? Are they up to modern day at this point? No. God, these guys have seen everything.
keep finding stuff and being like, this is going to end and this isn't the last one.
I'm enjoying it, so yeah. more power to them.
So riding in a staghound armored car, Major General Venery and a small party made their way past cheering Belgian citizens to be officially received by the Burgomaster. Crowds gathered in the place to celebrate their freedom. That's General Verney describing entry into Ghent on September 6th.
What year are we in now?
1944.
Okay, so we're coming towards the latter end. Yes. The latter end? Yeah. Oh, fuck me. I'm going to just stay quiet. You continue, Andy.
So yeah, France has been liberated, and up next we've got Holland. In particular, they need to take Antwerp, Brussels, and Ghent, and the boys from the 7th are heading to Ghent. They set off on the 31st of August. The first set of problems they run into are caused by rivers. The first one they get to, all bridges but two have been destroyed.
Ah, these unlucky gentlemen.
Yeah. This leads to an immense traffic jam, with units taking 10 hours to travel 18 miles.
That's quite the detour.
Yeah. It's like when we were leaving Download.
Oh, we went to Download Festival and we got stuck forever.
It took us about that amount of time to cover that distance.
Actually, looking back to that, I know how they feel.
Yeah, except we were trying to get home and we'd been camping for 4 days, not...
We haven't been at war for half a decade.
So they do manage to cross that river, and up next they run into the River Somme, which has only one bridge remaining, which promptly collapses. So they have to create these things called a Bailey Bridge, which is one of the, like, underrated World War II inventions, even used today. It's like a way of... It's a modular bridge where you can put all of the parts in trucks and drive them around, build a bridge without a crane, and just go from one side to the other. You don't need to be on both sides. And, like, they still use these bridges today. Like, they used them last year when there was flooding in Argentina to build temporary bridges. So this is an invention that's still being used. Montgomery, in fact, is a big fan. He says, the Bailey Bridge has made an immense contribution towards ending World War II. As far as my own operations are concerned, with the 8th Army in Italy and with the 21st Group in Northwest Europe, I could never have maintained the speed and tempo of forward movement without large supplies of these bridges. Like, it's just a weird to think an invention of a bridge changed the nature of the war.
Yeah, I mean, there's a similar like innovative design of a bridge in an episode of Thomas the Tank, where they create a walking bridge.
Oh,
so they should have done that in this. I think it's a it's a bridge that actually has legs and walks. So I don't know if that happens in this part of history.
That'll
as well.
Be after World War III. I'll actually show you a picture. You'll spot these when you walk around. By the way,
really,
you will spot these bridges right round England.
Oh, they're that common.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like, I can think of a few.
I'm going to... You keep that. I'm going to have a quick look. Do you have a picture up now?
Yeah, actually, I'll get one up. We can edit this.
We'll edit around this. Or we'll just... I'll keep on talking. How's everyone's day been? Yeah, me too. You're right. I do realize that Andy breezed over my gentleman pun. Because they're in Ghent. And I said gentleman.
I know.
Just you didn't address it. All right, here's the picture.
These with, like, diamond-shaped struts on the side.
Oh, yes.
Sometimes they, like, put the panels on the side.
Yes, I have been over quite a few of those.
Yeah.
I've seen loads of those around more rural train stations.
Yes.
That's where I've seen a bunch of those.
Yeah, so a bit of a detour there on the Bailey Bridge, but I thought it was an interesting little...
God, the 7th have seen everything.
Yeah. So they use their fancy bridges to cross the river, and they start to run into more resistance from Germans here. But they're pushing hard and fast. The 7th have got their groove back here. They go so far and fast that they're out of... they lose radio contact with their army HQ unit. They're too far ahead. And then eventually they push past the edges of the maps they'd been given.
Kind of like, well, we can't even do that, but...
Yeah. Oh, sorry, you said kind of like, and then we got... Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to make a comparison, and I realised we can't do that game. We're very much... I don't have a comparison to make there. Yeah.
On the way, they capture a V1 launch site, which is one of the four Nazi V projects. This one's like an early cruise missile.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, capture some sort of experimental weaponry there.
Just give you a sense of like the pace they're trying to keep here. At the town of St. Paul, a French city near the border, the 8th Hussars and the 5th Queen's Infantry flushed the enemy out of the city, except a single three anti-tank units, who, as soon as the 7th Queen's Infantry arrive, who are like following them, they just hand over to them, and the others just keep moving again. They're like really moving fast. So on the 4th of September, they're getting towards Ghent. At this point, they're moving night and day, and they're burning through 70,000 gallons of petrol a day.
Oh, that's bad for the ozone.
Oh, yeah, which is 70 trucks, 70 fuel trucks worth.
Oh, wow.
Just to keep them moving.
Oh, that's a lot.
Yeah. So because of this, they go back to a desert war tactic, and in the tradition of the Combi Force, they designate part of them to be the Ghent Force, intended to go ahead and capture the city.
Oh.
Led, of course, by the 11th Hussars.
Oh, the truck bandits themselves. Yeah.
So they set off bright and early that morning, crossing the border of Belgium at like 6:30 in the morning. They've got the Cromwells, which are the fast tanks, and they're able to keep up with the trucks and lorry. So the entire force is like thundering. Like, the tanks are rolling, the trucks are rolling, it's like shaking the ground as they like drive through Belgium. And as the day progresses, their vehicles get covered in flowers, fruits, and various alcohols given to them by grateful Belgians. So you've got quite a nice image of like flower-covered tanks.
I'm imagining like a nice juicy melon being eaten. Like just some really sugary fruit.
Yeah. It got to the point they stopped in towns because crowds would form around them and they couldn't get the tanks moving again.
The last thing you want to do is have to drive through crowds. Over.
One soldier got a very specific injury. He was injured by a bunch of grapes thrown by a grateful local.
Great. How are you injured by grapes?
I don't know, but from the list of injuries, that's pretty low down.
How... Just imagine getting through all that conflict and you don't take many injuries and then grapes get you. From a friendly, no less.
Yeah. So they travel 50 miles in that day through war-torn Europe, which is really going some.
Yeah.
And then, so the following day, they end up about 8 miles from Ghent at this point. And this is a great little episode here. They're in a town called Nazareth, by the way.
Okay.
Nazareth, Belgium. which I'm also going to use as a chance to... clear up. Someone emailed in, the Khan I mentioned last time isn't the Khan from the film festival.
Oh.
Different spelling. It's just a different French town that's also pronounced Khan.
Oh, right. So it's not Khan, because the film festival is C-A-N-N-E-S.
It's C-A-E-N.
Oh.
So, yes.
Well, they've not made that very easy for us.
No.
It's almost like they didn't think about us.
Yeah. But at this town, there's a German emplacement here. So in the morning of, this is the 5th of September, a German general, General Deyser, approaches Lieutenant Colonel Hollymann of the 5th Royal Tank Regiment. This German general's in charge of 1,000 men garrisoned, equipped with machine guns. He wants to surrender... with all of his men, but you will only surrender to an officer of equivalent rank. Because the Allies don't have a general on hand. Lieutenant Colonel Hollymann pretends to be a general in an attempt to get them to surrender to him, a plan that was apparently working until one of his men referred to him as Colonel.
Oh, no. Also, this screams trap to me. Like, if someone said, oh, I'll only speak to a general, I'd be like, you're trying to assassinate a general here. You're trying to take them captive. I wouldn't be falling for that. And also, having the plan scuppered by someone giving you the wrong fake name. Yeah. It's like, no, that's not gonna fly.
I love that he went for it, though.
It's a real cojones. I mean, why not? In that situation, yeah. They're trying to surrender. They're being finicky about it.
So at this point, Brigadier Mackensen comes forwards and tries to persuade the general that his rank is close enough to general that the general should surrender to him. But General Dazer's having none of it and announces his orders are to continue fighting onwards.
What?
And goes back to his men.
What a weird exchange.
Yeah. I just thought that was a great... I'd love to see the sketch or something of that.
What a chip on his shoulder this guy must have.
Yeah, I kind of have a theory. If you're the side losing the war, your generals have to surrender three or four like ranks lower.
Yeah, you don't get the luxury of picking.
If you're on the losing side, your generals are at, like... the British generals were way back, like, overseeing it. You don't have generals on the front if things are going.
Yeah, you're a lot closer to their centre than you are to their, so there shouldn't be any demands made here.
Yeah. So because of this, they clash with the German rear guard. They do take the city by that evening, having their tanks parked in front of the town hall, but it does take 3 days to clear the surrounding area, which is just 3 days of avoidable fighting if this... guy hadn't been so proud.
God, imagine being one of the Germans garrisoned
angry.
And he comes back and it's like, so have we surrendered, sir? And he's like, well, no, there was no general on hand, so we can't surrender.
Well, like, what? Like, you couldn't agree to terms. Like, no, I'm only surrendering to a general. At that point, I'd be like, do we shoot him and go surrender?
Yeah, I'm surprised there's no defecting at that stage, because they've been killed by this man's hubris.
So over the next 3 days, they clear the city of the surrounding enemy resistance, and also the rest of the division catches up with the Ghent force. At this point, they're now stood in the path of the German 15th Army, which even this late into the war contains 15 divisions, even though they're understrengthed. So the engineers, sort of unsung heroes of this whole thing, have been building bridges, clearing minefields and roads. They get to it once more, overlooked by the 11th Hussars, of course, and blow up every bridge on the River Lys so that the Germans are diverted and don't come through that area.
And they did that presumably using the grapes that they were given, the highly destructive grapes.
Yeah. So they have the region over the Polish Armored Division on the 11th and head east to dig out pockets of German resistance in terrain that's just bad for tanks. It's like Holland, and Belgium. It's like dikes and just flat fields, just very open. Then also cover. It's just a horrible mixture. There's mines everywhere. It's freezing cold. Just horrible. The division's so understrength at this point, artillerymen and anti-tank gunners are picking up rifles to bolster the lines.
Oh, no, you don't want to be reinforcing your men like that.
They've suffered 2,801 casualties between D-Day and October 1st. And it's not all doom and gloom, though, because at one point they find a supply depot stocked with bacon, cheese, and butter, which no one has seen for ages. They've been eating, like, corned beef. So this is a big morale boost, apparently. They'd, like, buy all of it. And I must say, that bacon sandwich after 4 years...
Now that will go down a treat.
Yeah, so they're fighting through this horrible terrain. They use crocodile tanks to clear it out, which are one of Hobart's funnies. Hobart, if you also remember, is the guy who originally trained the Western Desert Force.
Yes.
5 years ago. These crocodile tanks have their main gun replaced by a flamethrower
that
can
shoot
almost 150 meters.
Oh my God. We were talking not too long ago about how flamethrowers are just the most diabolical weapon to use in warfare.
Yeah. So they're clearing it with these crocodile tanks and also flail tanks, which basically have like a big bobbin on the front and just flail almost like a combine harvester to set mines and stuff off.
Yes, I remember you mentioning these ones.
Which I'd hate to be a driver of one of them.
That's a scary job.
What's your job? To trigger explosives.
I'm in a box that moves across minefields.
But they do eventually clear the area, taking 900 prisoners, but losing 22 tanks and 100 men.
Ooh.
But this does lead to them get 10 days off.
To enjoy those bacon sandwiches.
Yeah, enjoy the bacon sandwiches, have a trip around Belgium.
Handful of grapes to hand.
Yeah. So on the 10th, they're moved yet again along this river area. Icy roads, it's waterlogged. And just frozen ground peppered with grenades and mines. This sounds pretty horrible. At this point, the Queen's Rifle Brigade has another engagement in which it takes 30 losses and it has only one officer left.
Ooh, that's going to be bad when someone tries to surrender to them.
Oh, yeah. And manpower is a real issue, which is exacerbated by the Python and the Lilop rules. The Python rule says it changes at various points throughout the campaign. But if you serve for over 5 years, you can return home and then only take home postings.
Oh, wow.
So you get like a... You don't come back to Europe. The Lilop rule means that if you're eligible for Python, you can go back and then volunteer to return, but you get an extended leave. So either way, because they've been serving since the start, they lose a huge bunch. About 100 men return from their already...
Dwindling numbers.
But they do get to... their 100 men go back and join the 50th Division, which is a training division in Britain. And the 50th in turn send them two fresh battalions. So they get... They're back up to strength here. So it's a... They're settling in for a brutally cold winter. To give you an example, it's so cold the tanks have to run every 2 hours to prevent them freezing. They have to wipe the oil off their machine guns because the oil will, like the lubricant oil, will freeze.
Surely that's got a lower freezing point than water as well.
I didn't look it up, but I reckon so. It's rough. They're mixing boiling water and rum into their vehicles to act as like makeshift antifreeze. So, we're up to the end of December now. The division sets up a Christmas concert.
Hey!
Some of the men get to go to Brussels for Christmas.
Oh, that's some people do that now.
Yeah. There's a brief disruption on Christmas Day where a German raid destroys several vehicles. But otherwise, they get to enjoy the day listening to the King's speech, looking into 1945 and the March to Berlin, which we'll pick up next time.
That's quite a tense Christmas.
Yes.
I mean, they've got some nice provisions to tide them over and lovely festival. And, hey, this will be a big year for them.
Big year for the world.
Big year for the world. I think the last few have been big ones as well, but this is a real turning point. In a lot of ways, a good way for that year to go, but not without its loss.
But yeah, these guys have just... incredible, like, division. Struggled around Normandy and D-Day, but they're in bad tank terrain, and also, from what I'm picking up here, these guys are best when you say, go fast. Go, like, far. Like, strike. Like, do... Be where you're not expected to be. So, like, fighting, like, lane to lane...
Yes.
In Normandy just didn't suit them.
No, it seems to be a case of overextend and be the tip of the spear.
Yeah.
Do some real damage. That's where they excel. Be the shock and awe, in a sense.
Yeah.
Seems to be really where they are doing their best work. And their best work is scary work.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've been everywhere.
Like... Yeah, they've covered everything. I mean, now it's like icy conditions. Oh. They've went from beating Desert of the Sun... Beating Son of the Desert.
Yeah. To a bad winter in Italy, to a bad winter in Northern Europe.
Do they go to the Arctic Circle next? Just to complete the full rotation?
Not quite. Equator to pole.
That should be their slogan. Oh, wow. And I take it there's more hijinks to happen next time as well.
Yes. It will probably be the last one. I've written most of it, I think, but I've said that before.
Yeah, you say that. There'll be another 10 episodes to come for the 7th.
I said that and got distracted by Bailey Bridges and this episode with General Dazer because it made me laugh so much.
That's insane. The arrogance.
The arrogance of him, the balls of the guy pretending to be a general,
it's just two people really at the height of their game, just being silly in
having
the middle of a
mind war.
And then from the march back and go, no, we're not surrendering, guys. So what do you mean we're not surrendering? Did they refuse surrender? No. I refuse surrender. Yeah.
The guy who also let Colonel slip must have been, the rest of them must have been fucking Dave.
Well, that guy, by proxy, killed all of the Germans involved in that conflict, as well as some of the Allied forces that would have died as well. That's a heavy burden to carry on your conscience.
But I couldn't find more detail. I'm going to look for this. I'd love to find like some extracts from... if you get anything from the Colonel Hollyman, that would be great. Or General Date. Like, yeah.
Yeah, if anyone has any anecdotes about that they can dig up, then please send those in. Because if there's anything I like more than learning about this part of history, it's learning about the whimsical parts of this part of history.
Yeah, the like weird human moments in the big picture stuff.
Yeah, because when it boils down to it, these are just people, and people will react in the moment with whatever option they see fit. And sometimes that's, I will only surrender to important people. And so I'm going, well, I can be the important person. Bit of fibbing. Never hurt anyone. Yeah. Well, it's actually historically hurt a lot of people. Shouldn't do that.
Shouldn't fib.
You shouldn't fib. But in war, all is fair.
Unless you're just trying to secure the surrender of Nazis.
Yeah, I guess in that case, you're actually allowed
to
do
some white lies.
Some white lies. I'm a general. I also like that, like, sort of too good to be true moment. It's like, I'll only surrender to a general. And then someone's like, I'm a general? Oh, really?
Oh, this is all working out.
If it's too good to be true, Nazis, probably is. Well, history is not black and white. People will blur the lines, and we do the same here, Andy. We blur the lines between friend and foe, but today we don't have too much conflict going on. We're building the steady storm up to the conclusion of turn three, and thereby the halfway point. So we don't need too strong of one, but we do nonetheless need a common ground. And now for something nicer. A little oasis in the war. It's time for some common ground. I'm trying the intro for common ground. I'm recording. Maybe.
Yeah. And I've got one.
Perfect. Lay it on me, Andy. What is it this time?
Well, I bought a new kettle this week.
Oh, you have?
I have. And it got me thinking, I think we've unfairly limited the kettle.
Okay.
To being, it shouldn't be a kitchen appliance exclusively.
Okay. See, I thought you were going to say you've limited the kettle because you've bought a very small kettle.
Well, that's part of what got me thinking.
Because your old kettle was a very steadfast kettle. It was big, it was bulky, it was tainted with raw chicken because of the time you tried to boil chicken in it.
Yeah.
Which I won't let
no,
you forget.
No, that wasn't that kettle.
Oh, was it not?
No, I got rid of that kettle.
Oh, that's for the best. So, what else are you wanting to use the kettle for?
I think they should be in other rooms. I think they should be, like, in your office, or if you, like, spend a lot of time in the living room, have the kettle there.
Okay, to what end?
It's more convenient. Because it's not like other appliances where, like, it has to be in the kitchen for it to make sense. You could just have a kettle on your desk, and it would be much more convenient. I'm thinking spread kettles throughout you.
There's something about, it's sort of an unspoken rule where a lot of dangerous things are in the kitchen. You've got, a lot of gas appliances. You've got knives. You've got a lot of sharp and dangerous things. Should we be putting more dangerous things in other rooms? Now, the reason I'm asking that, Andy, is because
kettle's not that dangerous.
I'm calling into question, really, your mindset on this and your ability to speak on this issue, because you, not too long ago, you brought an extension cable into your bathroom to do hoovering.
Yeah.
And that's a very wet room.
I wasn't running the shower.
Yeah,
it's not wet all the time.
But it's still got an air of dampness about it because there's water around. So you're already playing fast and loose with the rules of electricity. Now, adding boiling water to the mix, it does make me worry about you.
There's nothing about the kitchen that makes the kettle safer.
There's an air of caution about that room. You're more careful in the kitchen than any other room. Am I wrong?
No, but not of the kettle.
You should be. It's full of boiling water. Most of whatever you're using it, it's full of boiling water. So when you say it's more convenient, so you're in your office.
Yeah,
you've got your kettle there.
Yeah,
what are you doing when you've boiled it?
What do you mean?
So you've also got coffee in there.
Coffee there.
So this is to make hot drinks.
Yes.
Yeah. So what you're using it for isn't changing. You're still making hot drinks with it.
No, I'm just more convenient. I just don't think it should be limited to the kitchen the same way other things are.
So then you're not just bringing the kettle through, are you? You're bringing through mugs. You're bringing through spoons.
The mug's there already.
I guess you're taking the mug there. You're bringing spoons through.
The spoon's there already.
The spoon shouldn't be there already.
You can leave the spoon in the instant coffee.
I guess you can, but you shouldn't.
There's a lot of you shouldn't for no reasons here.
But not for no reason. Right, so, right, you leave a spoon in boiling water. It gets hot, all right? I know it's a minor thing, but it does.
You've not described anything that's not a problem inherent to kettles anywhere.
Yeah, I know, and that loops back to my core point that kettles and boiling water are, in general, a risk. So you've now got a mug, which yes is there already, I guess. But then you've got a spoon, you've got coffee, instant coffee.
Yeah.
In an actual container, I take it.
Yeah.
Now you've got to bear in mind you have your coffee black, but a lot of people have milk in their coffee.
And this isn't for them. Not everything's for everyone.
So,
but if you're into a tea that doesn't require milk,
then, so you've got tea bags or coffee in this room.
Yeah, you could have either.
And when you say not just limited to that, I take it you're not just going to have a kettle in the kitchen and the office. You're going to have these in other rooms.
Well, I think because of the way mine's place is set out, I'd have kitchen and office slash bedroom. But in a future place, I could have one in the living room.
So you want three kettles?
Potentially.
What is this doing? What time are you saving here, realistically? Can we quantify this?
Because you're doing whatever you're doing. You're on your computer or you're reading a book or whatever. And you just flick it on and you keep going. And then it clicks and then you pour it and you don't have to...
You're saving so little time that I think this is such a non-issue that you've addressed. That this isn't... You've talked about boring holes into the earth. You've talked about building confusing stone monuments. This is nothing. You've not brought a controversial take. You've brought nothing to the table here.
But you seem to disagree with it. So.
Because there's so many bad things about this that because it's such a small convenience that you're providing yourself with a measured risk of, yes, I understand, it's not a huge risk, but the small risk attached to this is definitely... factors above the small convenience.
You have light switches and light in every room.
Yes, because you need to see in every room.
What time's that saving you? Have one room with light in it and go there if you need to see things.
Don't get cute with me. You can't take light from another room. You can't walk into the kitchen and bring your light into a different room. That's not how light works. And don't act like you're stupid. You know that's not how light works. Don't you? Andy, don't
you? It's pretty comparable.
It's not.
It's a convenience.
What's a convenience?
Having lights in each room
that's
is
not
a
convenience. Yes, Andy, no, it's not. That's not a convenience.
That's a convenience. 100 years from now, people will be like, look at rooms without lights in them the same way they'll look at rooms without kettles in them. So what are you doing?
You're struggling to stay above water here. You're moving so far away from an originally inane point to being an actually stupid person. And I'm so worried about your intelligence right now. I think these antibiotics you're on are like some sort of like brain fog inducing substance.
I've been a little foggy.
Are you on Quaaludes? So
I'm a desk kettle.
Right, okay. Andy, you need to understand, I'm not confused about where this is going or what we're calling it.
Okay.
I just don't see the problem you're fixing. You're fixing a problem that's walking like 15 steps to and 15 steps from the kitchen. You know that, don't you?
I do know that, but...
When you said, I'll be honest, man, I'm disappointed. When you said that we're underutilizing the kettle... I didn't think you meant I'm going to buy a second kettle and put it in my bedroom. I thought something else was going to happen today.
Oh, okay.
Even the celebrity on the sofa is raising his eyebrows, and he's got no right to do so. His career is on a knife edge, and he disagrees with you. Well, I'm perplexed.
A guy with bad judgment disagreeing with me?
Yeah, but I'm a guy with good judgment, and I disagree with you. We're united on all fronts. I have to shut this down.
Okay, I'm going to get a desk L.
You can't, right. You can't. You can't.
I'm going to.
I'm not. No. Why? This hasn't...
So I can brew teas and coffees at my desk.
So your common ground is that you want to have a second kettle in your bedroom.
I just think kettles aren't kitchen specific.
Are we out of ideas? Is that what this has come to?
No, I've got some others. I thought this was going to be better.
Do you remember what your last common ground was? It was universal sizing for clothing.
Yeah, I've burned a lot of brain power on that one.
That was, I'm not gonna downplay it, Andy. That was incredible. That was an astounding thing that I genuinely think is not just a good idea for us to whimsically wax about. I think it's genuinely a world-changing idea and an incredible business venture.
Okay.
This is a waste of money that's going to end with you having third-degree burns.
I'll give you an example of who I'm like.
I have a few names, but I'd love to hear yours.
Isaac Newton invented calculus and gravity. He also was an alchemist who tried to turn stuff into gold. You're not going to be 100%.
How dare you? You've just
got their blind spots.
You've just compared yourself to Isaac Newton because you want a second kettle.
The analogy holds.
Analogy does not hold. That's not an analogy, it's a lie.
Everyone's got blind spots.
Yours appears to be common sense and self-awareness. They're massive blind spots. If vehicles had those blind spots, they wouldn't be able to sell them to the public.
So you're not agreeing with this?
I agree.
Okay.
With the fact this will save you a few seconds.
Free the kettle.
That's all I can agree with in this.
I guess I'll have to take it.
Everything else about this is a waste of your money. It's a waste. I'll be honest with you, Andy. This was a waste of my time. If anyone's listening up to this point now, I'm really sorry.
I'd like to apologise to the fans.
This is not what we promised you when we started this podcast. We promised, to be honest, we didn't really promise a whole lot. This is already giving more than we promised, and by some accounts, I guess, we're taking away from your day. To stop this from going any further, I'm gonna end this episode.
That's fair.
If you do want to get in touch with us, whether it's to talk about the game or just to tell Andy this is not okay, and don't anyone send support for this. I don't want to be opening up the mailbag next week and finding that there's reams of emails that are agreeing that we should have kettles in other rooms. If anyone wants to decry this idea, please do. I think Andy needs to be put in his place. It's info@warwithamate.co.uk. That's the email. The website is warwithamate.co.uk, and the Instagram is just warwithamate. And some ideas are best left in the deserts of your minds, and that's where I hope you all have a lovely evening in amongst.
Okay, thanks for listening. Stay so humble and brave.
Good night, everyone. And I'm sorry.